cool.
Cool beans.
I'm very excited that we're still doing this podcast. They said we wouldn't make it. They said we wouldn't make it after episode 4.
But we did.
And that one butt joke that I did, that was sort of...
Like, I liked it.
Yeah, it was sort of a good, you know how TV
could have been,
writers...
It like, could have been a jump the shark moment.
Yeah, exactly. You know how TV writers, like, they get kind of buck wild if they think that their show's going to get canceled at the end of the season?
Yeah. This is your season of that one TV show that went crazy off the rails because nobody was watching it. The one with was it Brad Garrett? That nobody, like literally nobody was watching it, so it went crazy at the literal last second.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't remember what it was.
Okay, I wanted to make sure it wasn't having a fever dream. You want to do the intro?
Why don't you do the intro this week?
No. I feel like you've been doing a good job with the... Okay. The intros.
Thank you for saying that, because now I'm gonna fuck it up.
No.
Welcome to Podcasts Will Never Help You or Pony, not associated with the Genuine Estate, the first ever podcast in recorded history. I am with you as always, your loving host, Juan, as in the number, and you are.
Mm-hmm.
You are. I'm just, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Mm-hmm.
There's a G?
No, it's close, but no.
E?
Phonetically, no. Sound it out. No, it's scabby.
I can't. Okay, there it was. See, I was scabby.
So close.
Yeah.
That's fine. I know you're terrible with names.
Yeah, I'm terrible at faces too, which is very unhelpful because
we're a podcast, this is an asynchronous podcast.
All I can see is a charming picture of Mugman from Cuphead.
Yep, that's me.
Speaking of video games,
whoa,
yeah,
nice.
Today on a very special Pony video games. We're actually not going to talk about video games. We're going to talk about a format, a platform, a technology.
Sure, yeah, technology. A video game technology.
Yeah.
A platform, yeah. I think you're on the right path with platform.
Okay, platform. Let's call it a platform. And that platform
is... A failed Nintendo peripheral successor.
Yeah, exactly. The Nintendo Virtual Boy.
Yeah, that's it. That's what we're going to talk about. Not Oculus Rift, not Vive.
Can I say I've never even seen a Virtual Boy, like, in real life?
Me neither.
Like, what's up? Like, is that, like, an SCP thing? Are those real?
I think they are.
I'm starting to think it's an SCP thing. I've never seen one.
I've always wondered if there were, like, any Virtual Boy games worth playing. I think there was, like, I think the debut of Wario Land was in Virtual Boy. Or maybe it was like a sequel to Wario Land. It was something. There was a Wario Land for the Virtual Boy.
Really?
But, yeah. Yeah.
You know what? I think the only time I've ever even seen a Virtual Boy, like, not even in real life, just even on a screen, is in that one movie about that Macaulay Culkin-looking kid who he steals a bunch of money accidentally from, like, Tone Loke or somebody. Blank check.
Is that part of like that weird rash of like 90s/late 80s comedies where children had way too much money, like that weird subgenre of children having too much money?
That very weird but very powerful form of wish fulfillment. I was all about it. And also sometimes the kids would get with women who were like three times their senior, like three times their lifetimes.
Which is not...
There's some stuff there to unpack,
yeah,
I think.
A lot to read into.
But today we're here to talk about VR.
Yeah. Not about that rich vein of pop culture. We're talking about virtual reality.
Virtual reality. Yeah. So, let's do a classical sort of Greco-Roman debate here. Point is... VR is dead, and no one can be bothered to write an obituary for it, because it wouldn't get any clicks anyway. Woof. Ooh. That's a pretty good burn. from the what's it called when the team that's like arguing for the point? The arguer.
The right side.
The right
me
side.
Me on the right side of history.
You on the right side and me on the other side.
I mean, literally somebody like from, I think it was from Waypoint's Patrick Klepek, was a huge proponent of VR when it first started coming out. Mm-hmm. He was like all excited and shit. And, recently, I don't think it was too long ago, he wrote an article because this game came out, the bi or tri-monthly VR game that everybody kind of perks up at. yeah. Came out, and as usual, they had to, you know, cover it because it is an interesting game. I think it's called Moss. Okay. I don't know too much about it. I know that it's like a puzzle platformer, and it plays with perception pretty well because of the way it utilizes virtual reality and all that. Mm-hmm. But of course, they got to talking about how they were covering it, and it got to the point where it's like, yeah, this game is really cool and all that, but at the end of the day, does anybody really care? Like, nobody writes articles about VR because they get no traction. Like, they could, like, obviously, like, websites see how much traffic they, like, each article that they post gets, and inevitably, the VR articles get literally no clicks ever.
Yeah.
Which leads to this kind of weird chicken and egg situation, as usual with a lot of failed formats, you know, with Wii U, Vita, stuff like that. Like, it comes to the point where it's like, oh man, people would totally buy this if you wrote more about it. But it's like,
yeah.
No, because nobody cares about it. But yes, but nobody cares about it because nobody has it. But, you know, like, you know, it's bad.
I don't have anything. I don't think I can disprove anything of what you've said. As a professional VR boy,
a professional virtual boy.
God damn it! I'm gonna put that on my fucking business cards. Professional virtual boy at your service. Email me.
Contact me by Power Glove.
Yeah. Just like. Smash your power Ping, glove against the wall.
I'll hear
I
it.
Will fall I'll, out of it.
I'll be there.
As a professional virtual boy, I have to sort of... like, my knee-jerk reaction is to say, like, nuh-uh, right? Because, like, that's my whole shtick. But I think there's a lot of bigger problems with VR than just it's not... getting the excitement that it probably should be getting, because by all rights, I don't think anybody can say that it's not a really, really engrossing way to experience content, and a really sort of it's got a lot of potential. Obviously, I don't think anybody can argue against that.
I tend to agree, honestly. Like, even as someone who has never tried it, out of sheer stubbornness, and completely, I refuse to give in. Like, I have too much sane pride. I can't wear it. Like, the only way I could ever possibly, like, try this is by going to, like, a fucking Best Buy and strapping on that old headset and
that big, beautiful pair of glasses.
And sporting that sweet, sweet virtual reality face afterwards.
Yeah,
like just, and it's just not a good look, and I just can't. I can't ever. It's too vulnerable for me. I can't.
It is. Yeah, it's super.
Could you? Like,
you can't
you imagine
be
it,
much
like,
more
you know
undignified.
Me, you know who I am. Like, can you really?
Yeah, no,
see me with a virtual headset. Like,
I absolutely understand.
Thank
it's
you.
Very undignified, and you're in a very vulnerable place when you do it.
Thank you. Here's the thing. Like, Brenda tried it. Like, we went to a Best Buy, and there was a VR kiosk or whatever, and they were actually there was like a VR helper there, just to kind of
a professional VR virtual boy,
a professional virtual boy or a professional virtual girl, as it may be. She was just kind of standing around, kind of helping people put on the virtual reality headset and kind of letting them know that it wasn't going to melt their brains or make them
just
like
being a spotter.
You
still need a spotter. It's still at that point where it needs a spotter.
Absolutely. And like they just needed to let you know that you weren't going to become addicted to the cyberspace.
You weren't going to get Tron.
Jacked in.
You weren't going to get Kevin Flynn.
Yeah. Wait, Kevin Flynn? Like Tron? Is that? Oh, yeah. Okay. So she was there, and like they had that one game, Robo Recall, which is good.
That's like my favorite game.
Looks real good one. I
Oh my god! Once you get in there, okay, I'm gonna tell a story about Robo Recall super quick. It won't take a sec. The first time that we got, I was at Syracuse, right? We were doing like research into virtual reality and stuff, and obviously they have to have all the latest gear, and since they've got, you know, they're a pretty well-funded research university, they got money, so they got all the latest toys. And we had an Oculus, and it had, the day Robo Recall came out, I didn't even know about it. I walked into the lab because I had like work to do, and there were these kids playing it, and I was like, hey, what's going on with you guys? And they were like, oh, you gotta check out this game, like it just came out. And I
sounds like a movie.
After they, yeah, I got tronned into it. It was awesome. After they left, I started playing. I beat all the high scores that were on it, and then I kept playing, and I didn't
Juan,
leave that
take off
lab.
The helmet, Juan.
I came
take
in,
off the helmet.
I came
take
in
off
in
the helmet,
three.
Juan. You're still in there. You're still
I came in at three. I started playing, and then I let them play for a little while, and then I came back into it, and I didn't leave that lab until 10 p.m. at night. And then I had to walk a mile home.
Shooting robots all the way there.
It was so... It's the perfect sort of, like...
I don't think there's a game
that controls more perfectly than that.
Well, probably Super Hot, but they didn't have a Super Hot demo.
I haven't played Super Hot in VR. I've played it in Normie, and I don't think... I have a hard time believing that it controls
you
better.
You hush now.
But...
It's a cool ass game, and that anecdote is perfect because time just kind of flies. You're in it, you're in there, you know, you're jacked in. And she was like, yeah, that's totally cool. I would totally get that. How much is it? And I told her, and she was like, oh,
it's a lot.
Oh,
it's a bit and a half.
Some rich people shit.
Yeah. That okay? Yeah, that was my first point. Is that people like to say stuff like, oh, it's getting cheaper, it's getting more affordable.
No.
It's not getting more affordable. It's not, and I'll tell you why. It is the worst possible time for hardware manufacturers to try and push mass adoption on a market that is not ready for it. Because let's get into some mad money talk right now. Have you heard of a little thing called cryptocurrency?
I have one.
Do you know that as of right now, the only way to get a GPU...
is by selling your soul to Satan.
Is to draw a pentagram in blood on the floor and then put like five Game Boys on each corner of the pentagram and then cut your own arm off and leave it in the middle of the circle, and in 3 days it will turn into a GPU. Slowly.
But like a
slowly,
chimeric,
but
like a homunculus.
There. Yeah, GPU. It's going to be made out of skin, but it's a 1070. What are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? You take what you can get.
That's the thing, is that...
You take what you can equivalently get.
The hardware has always been prohibitively expensive, and ever since the supposed year of VR, 2016, graphics processors have become like impossible to find. Like, you can't do it, and even the places where you can get it on like prefab PCs, they've become ridiculously expensive.
Thanks, libertarians.
Thanks, libertarians. You really this is some freedom we got here. I'm so glad. Like, at the time when I bought graphics card, it was like the MSRP.
They were practically
was like,
hawking them on the street. They were just they couldn't get rid of these.
Yeah, they couldn't get rid of them fast enough. But for no, seriously, the MSRP was like $450, and I paid $470 for mine. And at the time, I was like, ugh, I'm getting fleeced here. I can't believe I'm overpaying so much for the guy. That was a steal compared to now.
Absolutely. Look at the MSRP now. It's
like $1,000. It's ridiculous.
It's just kind of like, it's just a never fluctuating number. Like, they can't pin it down.
It's just
refresh it and it just changes.
It just says N dollars. It's like, we'll let you know after it ships how much
you
owe
us. We don't
know,
dude. I know, it's just trust us on this.
Yeah.
We'll charge you something. We don't know yet.
N plus shipping.
Yeah.
But
you know, besides that, it's not only that. The games themselves are prohibitively expensive. To offset the fact that nobody has VR, these games are extremely expensive. They know that people are like fucking desperate to buy whatever, so the games end up costing an arm and a leg too for pretty shallow experiences. Cool, entertaining, and like usually unique. If it's not a shooting gallery, it's
shooting galleries can be good though.
Usually they're pretty, you know, but they're pretty unique. But they're still like shallow, ultimately, you know? Because who's going to dump that much money into a VR project in 2018?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Yeah, but so I think, like, those are the two big issues right now, is that, like, the market simply is not there, and there's no way to fix basic, like, you could go out, you could buy a shotgun and go out and kneecap every cryptocurrency miner. It would take you a while, but you could do it, but nobody's gonna do it, right? So until that happens, the market is not just, it's not gonna be there. And so, to that end, the only viable way to sort of make VR a thing in any setting is to do location-based entertainment, which is where most of the market is heading now, yeah, actually. Absolutely. So if you go to
rent, like, my VR out, please.
Yeah, exactly. If you go to, like, a fucking, if you go to most IMAXs in, like, a major city in, like, Toronto.
Oh my god, could you imagine, like, the, like, suburbs just having, like, lemonade stands with VR VR stand?
That actually happens. I've seen, like, hang out on the VR subreddits, and every couple of days there'll be a guy like, oh hey, I brought my rig to this, like, mom and pop coffee shop, and in the evening I can clear, like, 3 or 4 hundo just charging people to try it out and use it. And that literally just happens.
Yeah. And I guess, like, other kind of, like, non-video game related software development, probably still that still has legs in that arena. But as far as, like, a legitimate video game platform,
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen.
No.
I think it's going to firmly stay location based until we can get, like, realistic about the prices. And even then, there's really no, like, cuz you can't do, for example, like, you can't stream it, right? Streaming is even more prohibitively expensive than actually buying the thing, because you have to buy this really, really complex green screen setup that, yep, offers a satisfying view of what the VR environment looks like. Otherwise, you're just, like, you're streaming
the environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're streaming, like, what's coming in from the stereoscopic cameras in front of your eyes, and that's nauseating. Nobody wants to watch that.
I remember when they first started covering that, and I literally almost, like, threw up. Like, the first days of VR coverage, of, like, this is, ooh, no, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah.
But, like, outside of video games, it also probably has some legs. People are using it for, like, training and, like, design and stuff like that. But, you know, it's just, it's not, it's, okay, it costs about $1,200 to onboard you. It's not $1,200 worth of fun. Not at the current exchange rate. It's of, not, like, you can go to a thrift store and pick up a 360 and all the Halo games and just go to town with your buddies, split-screen co-op. It's not that much fun.
No, it's not. But oh well.
You know, oh well.
It was they tried. They did their damnedest.
We'll always have John Wick VR.
Yeah. All right. Do you wanna? Let's see here. What else was on the docket? Was it Where the Water Tastes Like Wine?
Yes, it's the new Telltale game.
Nope. Sounds like it, but no.
It looks like one. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's actually this really neat indie interactive fiction game, I guess I would call it.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because the interactive part of it is the one that's kind of been letting me down the most, I guess, a little bit.
Really?
Really, it's this, the basic pitch is that you are this little skeleton man who's wandering across the U.S., picking up stories and basically talking with strangers because you've been tasked by this... I guess I'll say supernatural being to get the souls of people that are wandering the U.S. as well. You're kind of like this, I guess not picaresque type, but I guess you run across your compatriots. The people you talk to are picaresque individuals.
Yeah.
So I guess sure, we'll call it that. Mm-hmm. And you basically have to talk with them. You exchange stories with them so that they, in turn, give you a little bit more about their own story, their life story. And you basically do that in order to get their souls, and mm-hmm. you're collecting the souls for the guy. I think the guy who voices the shady supernatural individual who's a furry, BT Dubs, is Sting.
What?
Give me a second. I'm going to make sure that I have this right.
Here we go.
Sting, the lead singer and bassist of The Police, and a successful solo artist in his own right, voices the wolf in Where the Water Tastes Like Wine.
Get the fuck out.
So there you go.
Did he write some original songs?
No.
Game?
So no.
What a fucking crime.
It is a crime, but the soundtrack is, like, I sent you some sweet jams.
Did you?
Throughout the week. Yeah, I think I only sent you one, maybe. I thought it was two, but the soundtrack is very, very good. What I would say about it is that it sending kind of is dripping in...
That'd be a good jam to, like, cross the U.S. to.
Dripping in reggae time signatures and...
Whoa.
No, I'm kidding. it's dripping in Americana. Like, it depends on what part of the U.S. you're traversing. The soundtrack changed. And it actually has different versions of the same song. Like, if you're in the Deep South, or, like, if you're like, in a bayou-ish area, it sounds, like, incredibly... You know,
twangy.
Suitable. You can totally, like, see yourself kind of, like, traversing a bayou. You could probably hear this on, like, a cabin that's, like, kind of built on the, like, across the fog. You can hear someone faintly playing their banjo or whatever.
Nice.
It's very fitting. I really like it a lot. It's very eclectic. Like, you can hear. There's even a, like, you come across a more jazz agey type environments. It's hard to pin down the. I think it's Dust Bowl era ish.
It says it's
depression.
About...
It's post depression or during. It's around. It's thereabouts basically, and it's kind of steeped in that kind of era, aesthetically. Okay. And it definitely commits, and the art itself super solid. The thing is that when you're traversing the map, and I think it was Austin Walker who said it on one of the Waypoint podcasts, it looks like a Twitch, like an itch game, an itch.io game, like an itch.io.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like it's kind of rough. The frame rate is kind of hitchy, and it really takes me out of it, because, like, you're supposed to be this little skeleton dude that's just traversing the U.S., and it's... It does, and I'm not usually one. Well, that's not true. I am usually one to harp on frame rate stuff, but it drags me. It distracts me a lot. Like, I'm just like, why is this? It's not. It's kind of rough.
No, I think in 2018, you're entitled to ask for a solid 30 to 60.
Just give me something that I don't. I wouldn't even mind if it ran at 30, but it just constantly just tanks for whatever reason. So that kind of takes me out of it. So the part of the game where you're kind of walking around the map is just not really doing it for me. You can whistle, and the whistling makes you go faster, which is very charming, and I like
that's
it a
very
lot.
Good.
Yeah, that's very, very... It's a good, very, very good skeleton boy who's just whistling his tune and getting across in whatever
Fuck
way
yeah.
he can. But it's just kind of, like, you happen across, like, cities and towns and whatnot, and you... Hover, like, if you approach something that has an icon over it, you press A, and you either find a story, or you can interact with a city. Like, you can explore a city and find a story. You can try to find a job, or you could, like, there's a bit of a slight survival component to it, where you have to, like, manage your, like, hunger and your health or whatever. But it's very, very, like, if you die, you can just start, and you lose no progress, really.
Okay.
It's very much an interactive fiction game. There's not a lot of stakes gameplay wise. The big issue is that this is a game that lives and dies by how strong its characters are, because inevitably the biggest portion of it is you know talking with the characters that you're trying to swindle out of their souls. And I happened across Austin Walker's character. Like, Austin Walker wrote a character for this one, and I love that character. Like, from the way he talks to where I can kind of see his storyline going. He's a very it's a character who's very concerned with, like, faith, but in very interesting ways.
Mm.
And I love it. That's a very good character. But aside from another character whose name I'm blanking on, I'm not super feeling them. Like, the conversation system is such where, like, they, since it's such a it's a game that was kind of made on a, you can tell it was kind of made on a shoestring budget.
Yep.
The conversations are a bit repetitive, where the person you're talking to is going to want a specific type of story when you're conversing with them, and they'll be like, give me something with a bit of tragedy to it. And you're going to hear that a lot. And that, I don't know, I guess I'm just a little bit less forgiving, but that really, really takes me out of this conversation that I'm supposed to be having with this fully realized character.
When they tell you to just bum them out?
I would, yeah, they say that, like, tell me something that's going to bum me out, and but they'll just repeat that ad nauseum. I would rather, I know why they did it, so that, like, I bet they thought that it would be more jarring to just kind of stop the conversation and go, like, this character would like to hear a story about this. But the way that it's implemented just, it lets me see the, it lets me see the strings, you know?
Yeah,
like, the seams. The scene, exactly, it lets me see the seams, and it bothers me a lot. In a way that I thought wouldn't bother me, but it does. The stories themselves that you find are very interesting and very diverse, and they leave you wanting more a lot of times, which is good, but also it goes both ways. There's this one, I'm going to give two stories as examples. There's this one story that I really liked. You happen across this forest, and there's this group of women, that are just kind of sitting around, and you have the option of either continuing on stealthily or just going about the way you were going before. If you select to just keep going, you step on a twig or something and they hear you, but they ask you to come by and join them. And what it appears to be is like this group of women who've had people in their lives, you know, either father figures or spouses who they've gotten rid of by some means or another, and they're kind of doing their own prayers for like healing, basically. Like, this is for the people who we no longer want in our lives and we got rid of by whatever means we could, or I don't recall exactly what it was, how it was that they phrased it, but it was an interesting look at something that could possibly happen, you know, in this era, more or less. Like, there's just enough, like, I could see that happening. I could also see it being kind of like a tall tale-ish thing that gets even wilder as it gets, you know, repeated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good, and that does leave you wanting more in the right ways. Then there's this other story where you, like, happen upon a hotel, and you go into the hotel, and there's, like, this fountain of ducks. Like, there's just all these ducks in a fountain. And the owner of the hotel is just like, hey, check this out. And he just, like, taps his cane, and the ducks start marching in a row. And you go like, huh, that's neat. And he goes like, I know, right? And that's kind of it. And I get it. You know, like, that you need a lot of different, because they'll tell you, like, hey, give me a story that makes me laugh. And I get it. I really do. But on the other hand, like, there are really just some stories that leave you going like, uh-huh, Ed? So there, it goes both ways, and it's uneven but interesting, and it's worth checking out. But I do think that it's kind of rough. I do like one. I'll give another example of like a funny story. There's like a mining company or whatever, and they're trying to get into this cave or system or whatever, and they want to keep pushing forward, but like, oh, I don't know, man. We hear that there's like this specter that haunts these caves at night, and you keep pushing forward with them, and they happen upon this what appears to be like this ghost, and they're like, and the game gives you the option. It lets you go either
ghost.
No. It's even better. It's even better than pretending to be a Scooby-Doo character.
It was
pretty good. It asks if you'd like to go like, that isn't a ghost, that's X character. And the other option is, oh shit. I did the other one because I was hurting for like funny stories, and I thought that like unmasking the guy would be funnier, and Surely enough, if you choose the, if you choose that option, it's like some Frenchman. He's like, je ne suis un fantasme. It's pretty good.
Fuck, that's funny.
It's pretty. There are nice things about it, and I like it, but it's also the recommendation comes with some caveats. Like I said, I do think it's something that you and Yaisha would enjoy, though.
Yeah, I think it definitely sounds like my cup of tea. You know, just a nice low stakes narrative story. I haven't played a Telltale game in a while.
But the thing is that there is a narrative to it, but like it's such a fractured narrative. Like it's just a bunch of narrative. Like
I don't mean like I'm not looking for like one really well written. I just want to like hear good writing.
Okay.
You know?
Then this is the game for you then.
It's just like in English class when you had to read a short story and it was by somebody you'd actually heard of,
mm-hmm.
and you got all pumped.
Finally.
It's like, man, I know who Ray Bradbury is. This is going to be shit.
Dr. Seuss.
Yeah. But yeah, it's simple isn't bad, I think.
No, not at all. And like I said, the ambiguity and the brevity of it works to its advantage sometimes, but sometimes it's like, that needed to be fleshed out a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair.
And that's video games.
And that's video games. Let's talk about, I don't know, I guess, leave it up to you, this time.
Let's go with All Hail the King.
All Hail, you, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about
move this, on to film.
This film that I saw on Daily Motion, because it's not, like, available very widely. It is a, okay, I'll just drop the artifice. It's part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
You motherfucker.
Yeah. We're done with Black Panther, but we will never truly be out from under Kevin Feige's big thumb.
Fuck.
His big novelty thumb.
That's how they call him, Big Thumb. Father of Thanos.
The true power cosmic. The Big Thumb. Yeah, it's a short film. I don't know if anybody even fucking knows what this is, which is perfect. It's only available on the DVD release of Thor 2.
that gem.
Yeah. I happened upon it because I was watching the Oscars, as I think a couple people were. Probably less than in previous years. Probably been on the decline for a while now because... you know, there's better things to do with your time, you know? We're all gonna die. Mm-hmm. But I was watching the Oscars, and, you know, obviously, Guillermo del Toro cleaned up, so big ups to him. I think our fans should go and say something nice on Twitter.
He needs it.
Yeah, like. He could really use it. Cuarón and Iñárritu have sort of been taking the piss out of him for a while. Because they just, like, you know, go to each other's houses and take... selfies with like doing funny things with the statues. Like
they have their own game night and they don't invite DDT.
Yeah,
they send pictures of them playing D&D.
Yeah, exactly. They play D&D and they use their Oscars as their game pieces.
Exactly.
And it gets very confusing because they look the same.
Like their valet is called Guillaume.
Their low level goblin valet.
Yeah.
And he would like that.
Goblin del Toro.
Okay, yeah. Okay, but I was watching Oscars. And, yes, Sam Rockwell. Friend of the show. Won, I think it was Best Supporting for Three Billboards. I don't know if it was well-deserved or not.
Probably not this year.
I mean, it reminded me, it gave me fond memories of the best thing I've ever seen him in, which is Iron Man 2.
Moon? Oh my god, I hate you.
Because he was the only thing that made that movie fucking bearable to watch.
Oh my god.
You pitched it, it's a good pitch on paper. Mickey Rourke doing a bad Russian accent, and, you know.
Sam Rockwell doing, it's eating scenery.
Yeah, just, like,
chewing it up.
Devouring, putting some sriracha on it, and just going to town. But it was awful, and he was the only thing that made it bearable. But I mean, he was just having fun with it, you know? He was, like, the only person on set having any fun with it.
He was like, I did Moon.
Yeah, I'm slumming it with you assholes. Especially Mickey Rourke.
No, Mickey Rourke was thinking, like, I did The Wrestler. This is also a freebie.
Yeah, everybody was slumming it in this Marvel movie. So he won, and I was like, oh, yeah, remember when he was in Iron Man 2? That was pretty funny. So I just started reading the Wikipedia for Iron Man 2, like you do. I just went on a deep Wikipedia dive. Mm-hmm. And I found out that the character Justin Hammer, which is Sam Rockwell's character...
Yep. No, you don't have to tell me that memorable...
No, I mean, our fans, they're not big Marvel heads. That's true. They mostly just sit around and listen to our podcast. Mm-hmm. They know a lot about Black Panther, but that's about it.
Because that's all we've talked about.
Yeah. But that's not the only time that the character, as portrayed by Mr. Rockwell, makes an appearance. He also makes an appearance in this other short film that is only available on the DVD release of Thor 2. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And All Hail the King is an 11-minute short film that follows the character Trevor Slattery, who you may remember is Ben Kingsley in Iron Man 3.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, we really needed to figure out what happened to that guy. So he, you remember what happened, right? He was like...
The Mandarin.
Yeah, he was the Mandarin, but he ended up being like, it was like a false flag. Like, yes, he was just an actor. Yes.
Alex Jones, I remember.
Yeah, it was some InfoWars shit. He went to jail anyway, because it was still a criminal crime. And so this is the story of him in jail, being interviewed by a documentary filmmaker who's trying to find out more about the Ten Rings, which is the terrorist organization that the Mandarin ostensibly runs. Mm-hmm. From Iron Man 1. And so the whole thing is just like Ben Kingsley doing what he does best, God bless him, chewing the shit out of some scenery and trying to make it, trying to get the people who bought Thor 2 on DVD to like not regret their purchase immediately.
Trying to make them think that they bought it for any other purpose than just gifting that one scene where Loki goes ta-da. Yeah.
Trying to reinstill some faith in Christopher Eccleston.
God! Brenda made me watch Thor 2 because that was the only way that she was going to watch Thor 3. Yeah. Like, and the only reason I wanted to watch Thor 3 is because Taika was directing it.
Yeah.
So she got me to watch it again because I had watched it with my family, and mm-hmm. I had completely, completely and entirely forgotten that Christopher Eccleston was in this movie.
Yeah, it's a real punch in the gut.
Fuck. Yeah, it absolutely is. Like, once the credits roll, that's where the real emotions come into play. You're like, oh, man.
Oh, man, what a bummer. Chris, what happened, buddy?
Shit.
The best Doctor Who episode of all time. And then this. Christopher Eccleston, star of stage and screen, England's answer to Meryl Streep. So it's him just, you know, playing that hilarious character of the fake Mandarin. And as it turns out, at the end, the documentary filmmaker, who is played by Scoot McNairy, who you might know best as the handicapped soldier who suicide bombs the Capitol in Batman vs. Superman. Yeah. You didn't see that? That was pretty funny. It was pretty funny because in that scene, the reason that they dramatically find out that the Capitol is about to be bombed is because Jodie Foster's character sees a jar on her desk full of urine that's marked Granny's Peach Tea, which alludes to an earlier conversation that she had with Lex Luthor. That movie's kind of fucked up.
That I did hear that's about a the infamous jar of piss.
It's a jar of piss that refers to an earlier conversation that she had with Lex Luthor about jars of piss. There's no context that makes that like you can watch it. They still talk about a jar of piss.
What is it with Snyder and piss?
Yeah, right.
His movies either look like piss or just feature it in best quantities.
He made those poor girls piss on each other in Sucker Punch.
Wait, right? Wait, what?
No, they didn't. I'm kidding. Not... But imagine.
Fucker Punch. That was a low-hanging fruit.
I'm so convinced that at some point he did actually try to include a piss scene in the Sucker Punch. I'm sure that's on the cutting room floor somewhere. I'm so sidetracked. Anyway, yeah. The reason that I want to talk about this is because the great sort of significance that All Hail the King has in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is that it introduces the first and only, to date, canonically gay male character in the MCU.
Oh.
And that is, of course, Mr. Justin Hammer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it
is...
Good
for him.
It really, like, it's a very, very weird... Like, I was really invested in that character. Like, I kind of wished he would come back for more, even though there's no real place for him in, like, the story of Iron Man or whatever. Just because I like Sam Rockwell. And it's literally, it's just, like, 2 minutes in, like, the end credits of this Marvel short film where he's sitting in a cafeteria with his newly minted boyfriend, who looks a lot like Tom Holland, actually, which was very weird to see. Hmm. Like, if you look at it real quick, it looks exactly like Tom Holland, which I was like, whoa, that's... Yeah.
Power couple.
Yeah, power couple. But it's just him sitting with his boyfriend, eating lunch, and looking at Trevor Slattery and just, like, talking shit about him, like, in a very catty sort of, like, what's that guy doing, you know? And his name's Trevor. That's like Bin Laden and Benny Hill had a baby. You know, like classic Sam Rockwell fare. Mm-hmm. And then the other guy just sort of like nods knowingly and puts his arm around him. And he's like, not here, baby. And it's probably one of the... It's probably the most romantic love scene in any MCU film, to be honest. And
no,
it was
really
just
begging for scraps, aren't we?
Yeah, really.
Fuck.
That's the thing of it, is that it's so... You know, I almost wouldn't put that on Wikipedia, whoever edited that. Whatever Marvel intern edited that Wikipedia to say that, I almost just wouldn't add that in.
It's almost like there was, like, a diversity clause or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. That's... Well, hey, but cool.
So if anybody tries to tell you that there's no... diversity in Marvel, just tell them that...
Excuse me, have you seen the special features for Thor Dark World? Thank
have you.
You
seen... Yeah, have you seen Sam Rockwell scorn his beautiful twink lover in Seagate Prison? Because that's what that is. It's an important piece of film history, and I think everybody should know that Justin Hammer's gay.
Well, there you have it.
Yep.
Alright, so...
Let's talk about The Speed.
Let's talk about The Speed.
I'm going to entreat our listeners super quick here. If you know of any film, anything that has been recorded that has the name The Speed and was released, saw any sort of release in 2012, and I'm talking about like a fucking YouTube upload. I'll take anything at this point because I need to know why when you Google for the movie Speed... Does the metadata show it as The Speed and released in 2012 and not whenever it was actually released?
What if they tried to reboot it? But they never, like, it never got off the ground, but they, like, fed it to Google anyway. Like, they were going to do Speed in 2012 starring fucking,
Yeah, a gritty Speed reboot with Ansel Elgort.
Starring, the guy from The Walking Dead. Jeffrey Dean Morgan?
Yeah. Fuck,
no,
that would have been good.
And
Jeffrey Dean Morgan is the bad guy, I'm assuming. As the bomber.
It's actually the bat. The thing in the movie is the bat. If you stop swinging it, the bat explodes. He tricks the protagonist to go into the batting cage, and he just has to keep swinging it, or else the bat explodes.
Yeah. Fuck.
Yeah, no, that's a weird one. That's... Worth contacting Google over, I would say.
Yeah, I'm going to report that bad metadata.
That bad metadata. Anyway, full disclosure, the only reason that we watched Speed We saw it at Best Buy for $7.99 Blu-ray. I was like, fuck yeah, picking up this bad boy. Similarly to how we picked up Heat, because it was also $7.99 on Best Buy.
Yeah.
And we're like, I'm scooping that bad boy up. The reason that we scooped this up was because there was this episode in Bob's Burgers where Bob just kind of wants to play with his model cars. And one of his model cars is the bus from Speed.
Oh, yeah.
And every time that he talks about the bus from Speed, it's just like this little jingle plays where it's like, the bus from Speed. And Brenda fucking can't get enough of that shit.
That's fucking funny, though. Like that whole, it, like when he's talking to the little Keanu later and he does like the voice of the little voice, Keanu.
Yeah, the
Draw me with short sleeves. Oh, fuck.
No,
that's like one of my favorite episodes, honestly.
It's one of Brenda's favorite, of anything. But that's really the reason why we got it, just to watch the bus from Speed. Every single time the bus from Speed came into frame, Brenda would just go, the bus from Speed. And that never got old. In fact, we had a false positive. Initially, there is a bus that appears in the movie before the bus from Speed. It's the bus. It's the first bus that explodes. Like what's his name? Jack. His name is literally just Jack. He doesn't have a last name.
Officer Jack.
Officer Jack is getting some coffee, and the bus driver is just like, "Hey, Jack, have a nice day." And Jack's like, "Yeah, you too, whatever." And he just starts driving away, and he just explodes. And we were like, wait a second, that's not the bus from Speed.
I mean, it's a bus from Speed.
It's a bus from Speed. So that's really why we picked it up, just to like, kind of say the bus from Speed in every shot that the bus from Speed was in.
Fuck, that's funny. That's a good, that's $8 well spent.
Absolutely. And not only that, but Speed is an excellent movie.
Yeah, apparently.
God, I really like Speed. And I sent you the Speed theme. The Speed theme is basically Metal Gear, the Metal Gear theme.
Yeah, it's really good.
Like, dun, 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 dun. Like, dun, dun, dun. Almost to a T. Like, immediately when the movie started, I was like, man, this is like some Kojima shit right now.
And fuck it, can you fucking imagine if that was the next joint from Del Toro and Kojima? The what? Speed reboot.
Speed reboot?
Fucking, can you imagine? It's just like, it's the same story. It's like a bus, and it's like, okay, it'll be like an electric bus this time, because it's in the future. And then, like, the lithium batteries will detonate if it goes below 50 miles per hour. And then at the end, it turns out that the bomber is actually a fish monster.
I was going to say, at the end, it turns out that the bus is actually just an eldritch being. Like, if it goes under 50, it turns into Cthulhu.
Yeah.
I'd watch that.
I'd watch the hell out of that.
In
the
heartbeat. That's funny. I really like Speed, and it sure is a shame that really quickly, Jeff Daniels in this movie is really good.
Yeah.
But the scene where he goes into the guy's apartment, like Dennis Hopper's apartment to do the busting, and he sees the bomb, his face, like his complete and utter resignation, is pretty much the finest acting that Sir Daniels has done to date. I feel like nothing in Full House touches it. That was also very fun, pretending that he was just the guy from Full House, and this is like his actual job. He just never told.
Like he's undercover.
Yeah.
Oh fuck.
Good dumb movie.
Yeah.
Of the vehicle movies, like Con Air, Speed. There was another one off the top of my head that I don't remember. But what's it called? The one with Harrison Ford. On the plane, on the airplane. No, not the fugitive.
No.
He's the president. Air Force One.
Air Force One, yeah.
Or the, you know, of the vehicle movies, I'd say it's probably the better. The vehicle action movies, it's probably the best one.
I think.
Written by Joss Whedon, uncredited.
Get the fuck. God damn it, Joss.
Fuck off. Fuck off.
Son of a bitch.
No wonder Dennis Hopper was always completely shoeless. I was wondering why.
I need to address something super quick before we move on.
Go ahead.
Was Jeff Daniels on Full House?
Jeff Daniels? I thought Jeff Daniels was the dude who... I get them confused, so maybe I'm wrong. I am wrong.
I think that was Dave Coulier.
Yeah, Dave Coulier. I get them mixed up constantly.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do, probably.
I don't know
I'm
why.
Sure I've gotten them mixed up, and that's why I know that's Dave Coulier. I'll cut that out. I just needed to know.
No, don't cut that out, because otherwise it would just be me sounding like a mad person.
Talking about Jeff Daniels' turn right. on Full House. Yeah. Like, he won an Emmy for that. Talking about?
Method acting as Dave Coulier playing the... Alright, okay. So that's enough film. That's enough highfalutin film talk.
Is that a good segue into TV?
I'd say so.
Let's do it, because I want to talk about some...
Do you have a Full House bumper this week?
I'll get a Full House bumper. I'll get something of fucking John Stamos doing an Elvis quote.
Thank you.
And here it comes.
Where do we put the baby?
Where do we put the child?
The pot.
Whoa, Joey, this is a living thing. You don't just stick in a pot. Use a meat rack. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, I want to do that thing that we said we were going to do where we talk about the great contributions of Hiromu Arakawa to the field of anime.
Go ahead.
Well, mostly just the one, you know, Full Metal Alchemist. I'm watching Brotherhood right now for the first time ever.
Where are you?
I'm probably like right on the cusp of part four. The last...
Okay, refresh memory. What the fuck does that mean?
yeah, exactly. It's a very unhelpful way they arrange the episodes. The last sort of cool thing that happened is that there was a clip... Well, not cool. It was boring. But it was a clip show episode with Hohenheim and Panako.
Who's Panako again?
The grandma.
Oh, okay.
But she was, like, young, because it was, like, in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of reveal that he's immortal, I guess, or he doesn't age, or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is, so don't spoil it for me. Because
I know why that is.
I've never, ever finished Full Metal Alchemist, ever. Not even during the original run, or the manga, or anything.
Now you will.
So, yeah, I'm very excited to be experiencing this story, as it was meant to be experienced, in a way that is, I guess, what's the, nobody's ever explained this to me, what's the difference between, like, Brotherhood and, like, the normal stuff?
And the original FMA?
Yeah.
Well, the original, if I'm not mistaken, what happened was that they kind of got to the point where the manga was, and they kind of were just like, well, fuck, I guess we'll just have to make up our own ending, and what happened, and what have you. And so they did. But then they did Brotherhood, which is a much more faithful adaptation of the manga, from what I understand, from the manga, from what I understand. Okay. That's my understanding of the situation. I remember watching the ending of Full Metal Alchemist and going like, "Well, that sucked." but Brotherhood, I remember being pretty satisfied by. If it went on for a bit, but I mean, hey, that's anime for you.
I mean, I'm very happy with it so far.
It's very good. It's a good anime.
Yeah. Anyway, the thing that is striking me and the thing I sort of wanted to talk about is some of the themes that they tackle in Brotherhood that maybe it was just I was like too young to see it when I was watching the original.
Mean the fascism?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Yeah, the thanks. What?
Yeah. The fascism is sort of coming through real clear, real warm fascism tones. It's pretty wild. Like, it's a bad time to be watching this anime for me because, like, you know, we're living it more so than we ever have been before, more openly.
Are you a dog with the military?
I'm... That's a great fucking, like, we should put that into the vernacular.
I fucking love it that they're just constantly...
Dog of the
constantly
military?
Called dogs of the military.
Dog of the military is, like, it's, like, in their in-universe, it's, like, a really cool slang. It's, like, it's really edgy, but like it actually like carries real ideological weight. It's yeah. like their version of ACAB.
Hey, Elric Brothers, ACAB, motherfucker.
Yeah, ACAB, you fucking
fascists.
Yeah, but yeah, it's like there's whenever they talk about the Ishvalan Civil War, which is like the crux of it all, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Those flashback, you know, it's just like it's always, you know, flashback sequences by law have to be sort of washed out and sepia. Desaturated. Yeah, sepia, exactly. But they always make a really good point of, like, highlighting, you know, all the military guys all have, like, bright blue eyes, and they're glowing through the sepia and through the desaturation, and, like, the Ishvalans all have red eyes, and those always glow up really brightly. And it's, like, okay, so I guess the fascism is sort of inherent in the original story, but the... that specific element of, like, it being tied to, like, the concept of, I guess, an ethnostate
mm-hmm.
is what you would call it. I don't remember that coming through at all in the original run, and I think it's something that's a really, like, good on you guys for really sort of driving that home. I can't believe that, like, you know, I guess I can say this, you know, like, Japan is sort of, like, insular as a culture, and they don't really...
historical revisionism is out the ass.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm glad we can speak so candidly about...
Oh, yeah.
This.
The most popular anime coming out is fucking Attack on Titan. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. And so...
okay, maybe not so much anymore, but still very popular.
No, but it's a huge, like...
Yeah.
But so for something so, like, at this level to be... willing to tackle those topics and, like, to tackle them so elegantly, like, to do it in such a way that is, like, both ideologically and artistically satisfying is fucking great.
I remember fucking hating the conclusion of, what's his name, Scar? His arc in the original anime adaptation was fucking garbage, I think. I don't remember it all too well. I can only remember bits and, like, barely. I just remember being dissatisfied by it. But in the new adaptation, I remember thinking, like, okay, good. This is fine, I guess.
Yeah, no, I'm in the exact same boat. I don't remember many details about his arc, which probably more than anything else speaks to how forgettable he was written as a character. But he's much more sympathetic.
The only thing I can remember from that is the... I don't even know if this is... Actually, you know what? It might have been from Brotherhood, too. I only remember the Lost edit. That man knows about Lost. But yeah, no. I feel like they did his character justice in the Brotherhood.
For sure.
Can't remember the exact details of why that was, but I remember feeling that.
So that's excellent. I just wanted to, like, talk about that a little bit, because I think it's... For that to come out... Like, for it to come out of anywhere would have been impressive, but for it to come out of that culture in particular of Japan with their historical revisionism and their sort of
and they really do a lot to, like, build up the characters and have them engage with that, you know, like
having them
be a part of the being them, you know, making them be dogs of the military, and to have them all have their own moments to, like, question that. You know, it's earned, I feel like.
Absolutely.
I feel like Roy, Risa, they both, as, like, kind of ancillary characters, have their, like, they have arcs to them where they realize why things are the way they are and why that probably should be.
Yeah, and it's important, like, they do make the distinction very clear between, like, oh, this is a shitty situation that we find ourselves in, not because, like, the highest military office in the land is controlled by, like, a shadowy cabal that wants to, like, commit genocide in the service of, like, a magical ritual, but just because, like, you know, that was some... We did a lot of bad stuff in Ishval, and that in and of itself is bad, and the system that enabled it is bad and should be dismantled or changed somehow. And they do make that distinction, and it comes through very clear.
We should definitely come back to this once you've finished.
Yeah, it'll take me a while.
Give him a shake and just beat the devil out of him. That's when you find out who your friends are.
Let's talk about what's your grand work today here in the studio.
Okay. My big addition to the discourse.
Yes.
It turns out that BuzzFeed article about ketchup with ice cream was mayonnaise.
That, okay. It is... Oh, that changes the game completely. It changes the conversation that we were having. Like, that entire segment from last week is no longer valid. Because that is so... Okay, first of all, mayo ice cream. Very bad. Very purposeful. Like, deep...
Yeah, there's a deliberateness. Like, there's, like... Before, yeah. It was like, oh, like, this ice cream... Like, ice cream and ketchup work surprisingly well.
Like, if you were...
This I'm making mayonnaise ice cream and putting ketchup on it because I fear no god.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you were at a restaurant, if you were at a restaurant and you were just sitting there with, like, a bowl of ice cream, normal ice cream, like, the way God intended... Mm-hmm. And, like, a server was walking by with, like, a bottle of ketchup on a platter.
As they do.
On a platter. As they do. A single bottle of ketchup. And then they dropped it.
Fresh,
and then
some fresh, of the fresh squeezed ketchup?
Artisan free-range ketchup. And then they dropped that bottle, and some of the ketchup somehow cartoonishly squirted out. Like, maybe the server steps on it, and the ketchup squeezes out that way.
Perfectly drizzled over the ice cream.
And some of it drapes over the ice cream. That could happen by accident. That could happen anywhere. And it's a very sort of low-commitment, low-stakes.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of like, it's just like, whatever, I guess I'll just try it.
But... mayonnaise ice cream.
This, you sat down and you thought of it. You thought this through. You have a recipe. You have the keys. You took the keys to God's kingdom and ransacked it.
Yeah. You attempted to violate the equivalent exchange.
Homunculus ice cream. It just kind of like makes sounds at you. When you poke at it with a spoon.
I want to die.
Your little chimera ice cream. Okay, well, whatever.
Wait, one more. I think all the philosopher stones are made out of ketchup. Okay, I'm done. Okay, but so that's one thing, right? It's like, that makes it pretty purposeful. And then the other thing is, I'm going to go ahead and sit down today and try and think of the moments in my life where I have sat down at a table and... just had like a fucking bowl of ketchup and mayonnaise and nothing else in front of me. Like, what kind of a fucking world are you living in where
that's like you were fired. Like you were fired and you're like you open the fridge, there's nothing there. You look at the dishes, the only thing that's clean is like a cereal bowl, and the only thing that you have in your fridge in the shelves, you spot like a jar of mayonnaise and a bottle of ketchup, and
not even a jar, like, not okay, a jar of mayonnaise and then a couple of loose ketchup packets from McDonald's.
Perfect.
That's what you spotted.
And then you like you look around, like you unplug your phone. You look outside of the Venetian your Venetian blinds. You close them. You turn off all the lights in your apartment or your home or whatever. You turn off your cell phone and you just sit down. You mix your dark food, your forbidden meal, and then you just eat that in solitude and you sleep for 40 hours.
Yeah, it's the level of like. I think there was probably a long, arduous discussion at Fox in the mid-aughts about whether the hilarious meal that Job and Tobias make for themselves should be Parmesan cheese and mustard or just mayonnaise and ketchup. It's on that level. It's like auteur comedy as food. It's fucked up. It's terrible. It's the worst. It's really bad.
I mean, I love mayo ketchup, but like...
Yeah, okay, yeah. Mayo ketchup or fry sauce.
No!
As it's known by the whites.
It is with a heavy heart, I must announce.
It's a it's a good flavor. It's a good condiment. But plus you don't... It's not a meal!
No, of course not. But that's what we're talking about. But
it's not a meal. It's not an entree.
No, it's not a thing.
It's not a thing at all.
You can't chopped your way. Like, if you have a basket of ingredients, you're not going to make mayo ice cream.
That's already in there. That's already in the basket. Imagine if you just, like, if they hand you the basket and you just take that bottle and slap it in front of the judges and they're like, boom.
What is this? Oh, this is mayo ice cream ketchup compote.
Compote.
Fuck that.
Yeah, fuck that.
But unacceptable. On the other hand, I don't think there's another hand. I do kind of like zany ice cream flavors.
There's a limit to them. Yeah, it's a problem of semantics because everybody likes zany ice cream flavors. Like
no one likes unholy ice cream.
Yeah, nobody likes spiteful ice cream flavors is what I would call that.
The garbage pail kids of ice cream flavors.
The fucking God makes me so upset.
The Thor 2 of ice cream flavors. Because there's actually this really cool local ice cream parlor called Five Functions,
mm-hmm.
and they have like some pretty cool flavors. Recently, we've had like lavender ice cream, and that was pretty good. The first time we had it, it was gelato actually, and we had it at this gelato place in Naples, and I personally thought it tasted more like blueberries than the lavender, and Brenda was like, no, are you kidding me? This is lavender. This tastes like lavender. And I'm like, all right, babe, whatever. Sure enough, like a couple of months later, we happen upon like this killer lavender ice cream recipe, and like they were like, oh, add blueberries for. And I was like, fuck you. Fuck you.
Oh my God. I did not expect that.
I felt it was the most confident in my palate I've ever felt.
Yeah, fucking, you should be on Chopped. You should be a judge on Chopped.
I should be, right? Anyway, but then this other lavender flavor in Five Functions actually does taste like lavender, in my opinion. And Brenda hates it. But they have a bunch of zany ice cream flavors too. Like they have lavender, they have one that's avocado.
Oh boy,
and like red bean, but I like red bean.
Oh, red bean's delicious.
Yeah, that's pretty dope. But here's the thing: I probably would try like avocado ice cream. Like,
but I'd try it. Yeah.
Am I gonna have mayonnaise ice cream? No.
No, that's awful. It's like mayonnaise by itself is not one of the
that's like fear factor shit.
Yeah, exactly. Like nobody does that. That's like a dare. To just eat mayonnaise.
It's like the jelly beans that are flavored like whatever.
Yeah, exactly. The fucking the bad Harry Potter jelly beans.
Yeah.
The poop ones.
No, earwax.
Oh, vomit.
White people.
Yep.
You can talk about Google Translate later. I'll save sluggage.
No, we can talk about both, because I don't think there's a lot of meat on this bone. I just want to put everybody up to, you know, the hot new artist on the scene, Google Translate Lady. I downloaded her latest mixtape from datpiff.com. It's called Deep Web Escape. It's a very good album. It's a very good album. The art leaves a little something to be desired, but it's a great track with a lot of great bars, great beats, and some features from some of the best in the industry. We got a feature from Lil Jon, got one from 21 Savage, got one from Designer and Future.
Is this real? Are you like saying real things?
That's the thing. I'm not.
Okay.
This is a mixtape that was made by some enterprising individual. What it is it's a bunch of really good. I want to stress that point. I really like them. I think they're really good songs. Hip-hop tracks made, like, using the Google Translate.
Is this like that Vine, or not Vine, but maybe it's a Twitter. It's maybe it's a YouTube channel that does, like, hip-hop auctioneer videos?
No. Well, kind of. I mean, I get it. It's like, it's basically just they put all the lyrics into the Google Assistant or whatever, and then it speaks them out, and then you put a beat under it.
And right, so that's... But are they, like, established songs?
No, they're not established songs. They're completely original compositions, each and every one.
Okay.
From the ground up, original.
which is
what... Have you seen those videos, by the way?
Yeah, I've seen them.
God, Jesus Christ, yeah, I love those videos.
Those are really good.
And they're bangers.
Yeah, they are. Most of them are bangers. but yeah, it's dope beats under the Google Assistant and some hot bars spit by... Here's the thing, is that, like, it's very... It's not on Spotify. It's just a it's just a fucking free mixtape. Just go download it off datpiff.com. And I did. I downloaded it, and then I put it up on my Google Play library so that I could have it on hand at all times because I really fucking like it. The wild thing about this is that it's very high concept. Like, whoever did this is a very creative individual because I have no...
This is some Neil Cicierega.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I have no fucking idea who this person is. Like, there's nothing... I've been Googling. I've gone to, like, 3-4 pages of results down. Maybe it is Neil. Yeah. I don't know. It could be, for all we know. But the only thing that, like, maybe puts a little doubt on that theory is that the features on the album, all those features I mentioned were sort of real insofar as, like, the tracks all have people on them who do really good facsimiles of those rappers. So, like, the Lil Jon feature is a guy doing a Lil Jon impression, and it's very good. This guy's doing, like, 21 Savage impression. One of the tracks is called Time Machine. It's only a minute long, and the feature on that is Feat 2008 Childish Gambino.
That's funny.
It's funny. It's very funny, and it gets funnier when you actually listen to it, because it is a guy doing, like, a very specific impression of Gambino from, like, 2008, and he's also very purposefully covering up his nostrils so that his voice comes out more nasally, like that.
Oh, God.
It's fucking funny. It's very good. And I think everybody should listen to it, but mostly I just want to know who the fuck did this.
Stand up.
Yeah, stand up, please.
Step forward.
Author.
This is the entire internet steps forward. It's like the Spartacus moment.
Yeah.
I am the Google Translate lady.
I'm so consumed. I want to just, like, draw them out. Like, what I want to do is...
It's like some eldritch artifact that consumes your sanity.
I'm going to put, like, one of the tracks as, like, the outro for this episode in an attempt to, like, trigger a DMCA notice or something. Even though this platform isn't monetized. We have every intention to monetize it. Hopefully that's enough to get somebody out of the woodwork.
Yeah, there you go. We're going to make some sweet cashola soon. Yeah. Eventually, in the future. Just you wait.
Yeah, we're going to get that fucking Blue Apron money coming in.
Just you.
But yeah, that's all I want to say.
Wild.
It's pretty wild. But we should talk about Sludge.
No. You've activated my trap card. I actually want to talk about we went to this showing of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Movie.
What?
Today. Yeah.
What part of Florida are you living in that's so fucking cool where all this cool shit happens where you get, like, zany ice cream and Yu-Gi-Oh! Screenings? What the fuck? I lived in Florida for, like, 3 years and I never got any of that shit.
Do we have this movie theater? Like, a bunch of movie theaters have this partnership with Fathom Events. And Fathom Events does, like, screenings of, like, a bunch of different... Like, last week they were showing, like, Dark Crystal, I think.
Jesus.
Yeah. And they... so this weekend they were showing the Yu-Gi-Oh! Movie. next month they're going to be doing... the Ghibli... Well, actually, throughout the year, they're going to be doing Ghibli screenings, so...
Yeah, there's a Ghibli one that Fathom's also doing here.
Yeah. Anyway, so, we watched that.
Fuck
me. We had a great time.
I bet.
There are really two things I want to point out. In that movie, Kaiba has a, like, he does that thing where he's like, oh, God, Yugi has, like, the Egyptian god cards, and I'll never beat him. I'll never beat him! Yeah. So he goes to Kaiba, this is where he goes. He goes to Pegasus' island, his own little private island where he's recovering from having his eyeball taken out.
Yeah.
And he goes there via jet, right? he flies the jet to Pegasus'.
That's already good.
Speaking of children with money, too much money, like with the wish fulfillment, Kaiba is like an edgelord version of that.
Yeah, like, Kaiba is like an emo Richie Rich.
He's Richie Rich, like, in his teens.
Like Macaulay Culkin would be the perfect person to play Kaiba right now.
Perfect. The jet, Juan?
Yeah.
Is in the shape of a blue-eyes white dragon.
It's a blue-eyes white dragon. Wow. I just had, like, a fucking Raven Simone-esque vision. Like, the camera went into my eyeball, and I saw the jet in my mind's eye. As soon as you said the word jet, I was like, fuck. That's a strong memory of, wow.
And we lost the shit one.
It's incredible.
Almost had to wheel us out of the movie theater. And the thing is that, like, there were people watching it. Like, it wasn't, surprisingly enough, it wasn't just the two of us in this Fathom event screening of the Yu-Gi-Oh movie. There were, like, actual human beings in this that went.
Was
alone.
It like kids? Were they like.
No, they were like teens. They were like, not even teens, like grown people.
Okay, yeah.
And like, they kind of glared at us when we left at the.
Get the fuck out. If that shit's not funny to you, you don't really have any respect for the source material. Let's be perfectly honest.
Like, they were like, excuse me, I'm trying to enjoy this film.
Yeah, I'm trying to enjoy this fucking. Oh my god. Get the fuck out of here. That's funny.
Yeah, it's good. That movie's bad. That movie's really, really bad. Like,
did those people who glared at you like whip out a duel disc as you were on your way out and were like, "I demand like, satisfaction."
Yeah, exactly. They slapped me with the duel disc.
With like the sharp end too, so it really hurts.
Yeah, I actually have to like go to the dentist.
I got duelist mouth.
I got dual mouth. I really wanted that movie to have the original VA for Tristan. Do you recall the Yu-Gi-Oh series?
I don't. Okay. The problem with Yu-Gi-Oh for me is that my memories of it have been completely corrupted and almost entirely overwritten by the Yu-Gi-Oh Abridged series on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
So, like, that's all I remember for, like, everybody. Like, I don't remember what their original voices sound like. I only remember
I'm pretty sure that they do a goof with it. Because, like, in the first couple of episodes for Yu-Gi-Oh! The voice, like, the VA for Tristan is literally just, like, Barney. Like, the dinosaur. Like, he literally talks like this. It's bizarre. And I really wish they just kept that. Because now he just sounds like generic anime friend.
Oh man, that's funny.
At least before he had personality. I'm glad that we get to end this podcast talking about Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah, it feels true to our brand.
True to form.
Yep, definitely. Fuck, that's funny.
Yeah, you want to end it there?
Everybody, go watch Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yo, move.
That bass line was fucking sick.
That's Grime, right?
JME is composing the soundtrack for the new the new Yu-Gi-Oh!
Witch House Yu-Gi-Oh! Anyway, so you wanna tell the fine folk where they can find us?
Yeah, they can find us on iTunes and Google Play or wherever fine podcasts are available by searching for Podcasts Will Never Help You. Mm-hmm. Hopefully our SEO will get really good to the point where you can just search for Pony and it'll show up, but that is a fucking unparsable string. Most search engines won't even like process it. They'll be like, oh, you meant like a word, right?
You meant Pawnee.
Yeah. You were looking for like season 4 of Parks and Rec.
A good thing.
A good piece of content. You can also find us on our website, pony.com. That's P-W-N-H.
Wait, unparsable. Not even us.
I can't even spell it. I was really impressed with myself. I was going back in our old episodes, and the first time I mentioned this URL, I spelled it perfectly, like, without
just,
even pausing.
You know what? Why don't you just edit that in here?
Yeah. Here it comes. I'll just say all the letters individually very slowly, and then I'll cut out the silences in between so that it
seems
quick.
Say the alphabet.
Abe. No, it's
you'll,
podcast.
You'll get it eventually.
Pony.com, P-W-N-H-Y. Z. No, Z.
Kai. P-W-N-H-Y, Kai.
Yeah, you can also find us on Twitter and Facebook by the same letters.
Those.
Yeah, those letters. And thank you for listening.
Wait, no. Where can they find you?
They can find me. Fine, I guess I'll finally do it. You can find me at Sauce of Ducks on Twitter.
Yeah, that's right. That's where they can find you.
Yeah.
They can find me at Celestial W Trash on Twitter, and yep, also A Song of Ice and Fire Pro Wrestling on Tumblr.
Mm-hmm. And that's about it. We've got a big social media presence.
Now we do. Hell yeah. Facebook page and everything.
It's literally impossible to just not like trip over some of our rich online content.
And Twitch stream starting up soon.
Yeah, we're doing a collab with PewDiePie.
We'll do a Rugrats Studios playthrough of the mini golf mini game. That's our first piece of Twitch content. Yeah. You ready for my joke? My sweet, sweet outro joke?
I'm so ready for your joke.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Please help, I can't get out of my house.
That was good. You turned it on me.
Boom. That's the brevity is the Dark Souls of wit. That's a post I saw.
Bonus joke.
I did not make that up, but I really liked it.
It's a twofer. Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you for listening to Podcast Will Never Help You, the first podcast in recorded history.
The first, but not the worst.
Check
it. Good night. I got the glow. I got the knife, I got the foe. I fuck your bitch from head to toe. Make my money long.
I'm pretty when I lean like I got the Mabel. My money longer than a fiber optic cable. Run up on the teller and I hop the table. Run out in the lot and hot wire some cables. When rappers rap they're only telling tales and fables. Never us, we out here really getting paid though.
Google Translate.